In the large bowel, really important process of detoxification occurs where the body will dump out waste into this big sausage and it will absorb water back into the body. In order for that part of your body to work very well, it needs lots of... We are what we eat. If you're eating foods that are high in calories or nutrient low, then your body's going to be the same. If you eat foods that are highly packed, nutrient rich, then you too will experience a high performing body. But there are plenty of other ways that your body is signaling that the foods that you are eating are not suiting it. Allergies, where you get rashes or get itchy or get headaches or a red flush when you eat certain foods. Then there are conditions that can be a result of the direct attack on that whole system. So you might end up with... Welcome to Hormones with Sam, your guide through the confusing world of hormone health. I'm your host, Sam Beaupatrick, here to help you demystify and unlock the secrets to living a vibrant, happy life. Together, let's make hormones fun and sexy. Hey, you're with Hormones with Sam, and today we're going to be discussing gut health and its impact on your hormones and also how hormones impact on your gut health. It's only really in the recent years that we've started talking a lot more about our gut health, the importance it plays in our homeostasis, in making us feel healthy. And certainly it's only recently that we've been talking about gut health and how it impacts on our hormones. Now, let's just talk about the gut system and what it's all about. It starts with your mouth and follows down the front of your sternum into what's called the stomach, which then goes through, and it's all to carry food so we can get the nutrients out and put the byproducts of detoxification back into this system, past the small intestine, down to the large bowel when we can defecate it out, which is called passing a bowel motion. During that whole process, what happens is we're chewing, doing different things at different points. We're chewing our food, which enables it to go into smaller fragments. Then in the stomach, hydrochloric acid is secreted, which starts breaking down the proteins, and the primary role of the stomach apart from that process is to start absorbing the sugars or the carbohydrates. From there, the chyme starts moving into the duodenum and over into the small intestine, which is kind of, I'm doing it along here because it goes underneath your ribs, passes via the liver where the gallbladder sits, and the gallbladder can squirt out little bits of bile salt. Now, the bile salt play a very important role. It helps us break down fats, but it also has an antimicrobial benefit and lots of other benefits that we're starting to discover. Now, under the liver, which is just on the right-hand side of your body, under the ribs, the liver plays such an incredible role in our body, and particularly when it comes to balancing hormones. It's a standout organ on its own, but it's often woven into the digestive system and considered part of the gut system. That's because one of the roles it does is it produces bile salts, which are then secreted through the bile duct. Now, the bile duct is usually the size of your little finger, and it's just a sac that holds those bile salts. So when they're needed, they are secreted. Bile does a lot in the body. It produces these soaps, which enables us to break down fat. But it also has an antimicrobial benefit and quite a few other things that we're just starting to discover now. At about that same junction, which is called the sphincter of Oddi, the pancreatic head also has a little duct which will release the pancreatic enzymes. The pancreatic enzymes are, you might have heard of some of them, bromelain, pancreatin, and they start to denature and break down proteins. This process is super important because our body can't absorb complex proteins. It needs it broken down into little components called amino acids. That occurs in the small intestine, where there's thousands of little villi to enable a huge surface area so proteins, nutrients from our food, vitamins and minerals can be absorbed. There's also a forest of what we call microbiome or good bacteria, which help protect our body from invading viruses and bacteria, which historically have been on food. And really interesting, about 70 to 80% of our body's immune system lies just inside the lining of the gut wall. We call that the GALT or the MALT system, and it's acute lymphatic tissue, which plays an incredible role for determining if something's food or if it's a virus or bacteria. Now, at that level, if something comes in across that barrier into that GALT, that immune specific cells, and they determine, they don't know what it is, they will activate the immune system. So we'll get the cascading things of white blood cells, T helper cells, that tell the body it's under attack. Interesting fact that milk strands, the casein in that, can activate the immune system because the body will really struggle to break that down as a protein. As the food, or the, it's now called chyme, goes down the small intestine past the ileocecal area, it will move into what's called the large bowel. In the large bowel, really important process of detoxification occurs, where the body will dump out waste into this big sausage. I always think of it like a sewage plant, and it will absorb water back into the body. In order for that part of your body to work very well, it needs lots of water and the action of peristalsis. Now, peristalsis, if you can think of this large bowel as a sewage system, but around the outside of it, it's got rings of muscle which in unison propel that what's becoming like a more and more looking like a feces through that system. We need movement to do that. Because it's a muscular action, we need to be moving in order to do that. And people who are sedentary, or people who are in wheelchairs or have nerve damage to their spine and don't have that innervation for the nerves, often suffer with constipation. A really big tip here, because it's so important to evacuate all that toxic waste on a daily habit, is drink lots of water and make sure you're exercising. Now, if we look at where hormones are metabolized in the body, they're metabolized all throughout that system. So it's a system of making sure the food is in a state that we can absorb all the nutrients out of it, all the proteins that we need to make the hormones, all the nutrients and vegetables, the vitamins and minerals, the phytoestrogens, the antioxidants. But it also plays this dual role, where it goes from being an absorption sausage to being a waste management system. Before, I alluded to the fact that the liver played such an important role. It's a filter, one of our filters. We also have the kidneys that are filters, the skin that is our filters, and the lungs. But with hormones, the liver takes on most of the burden and filters most of our hormones. In fact, the filter system of the liver is so important that after each heartbeat, blood gets shunted through the liver so it can go through a filter system straight away. The liver will what we call conjugate hormones. So an example of estrogen. Estrogen is a wonderful chemical structure that, when in balance, is just awesome. When you're producing too much of it or not clearing it out of the body and it raises up, it's diabolical. High estrogen is associated with the female reproductive cancers, such as breast cancer, ovarian cancer, endometriosis, adenomyosis, anything where there's proliferation of the reproductive tissue, often there's a high estrogen component to it. And the liver is the major organ that will filter and conjugate those estrogens to get them out of your body. So we need to really make sure your liver is optimized. Some things that will help optimize your liver is understanding, one, the negative things on your liver are pharmaceuticals, because your liver has to metabolize all the pharmaceuticals. So if you're taking, you know, a few ibuprofen a day and a couple of paracetamol, that puts extra burden on the liver. The liver was designed to cope with a healthy diet, lots of exercise and water, not our modern day living. Stack all these negative things on it, then notwithstanding synthetic chemicals in the air and vapors and other pollutants in your environment, and the liver all of a sudden has a backlog of work to do. And increasing estrogen levels might be a consequence or something you experience because your liver is struggling to keep up. So how do we help our liver with the conjugation of those estrogens and keeping the filter system working really well? Broccoli is considered a superfood and certainly would be on my top 10 list. It contains an enzyme that enables the liver to conjugate those xenoestrogens and naturally formed estrogens, so you can pass them through into the bowel and move them out efficiently and effectively. Other green leafy vegetables have phytoestrogens and powerful nutrients that the liver relies upon to do its job of filtering, as well as having lots of water. You might have heard to drink 8 glasses a day, and a lot of it is to help that filtration system. I'm going to return to the small intestine before when, or the small bowel as it's also known, where I was discussing the word microbiome. Now, gut microbiome, as opposed to your skin microbiome, refers to the bacteria that live within your gut. And it seems weird because we're kind of taught when we're growing up that bacteria are dirty and grubs are bad, yet there are species within us that live that are super important for our health. And there's a few reasons why. They help balance hormones, but they also protect us from those invading pathogens and keeping the cell wall in an integral place. Now, with the cell wall of the gut, it's very thin. It's like a stocking. Now, it should enable nutrients to go through, so we need it to be permeable. We call it semi-permeable, and that means that nutrients can pass across where we can absorb them. If, however, and this is a very common occurrence when people have gluten, the links in that hose or that stocking start to get too wide, they lose the permeability and they lose the ability to discern between what's virus, bacteria, and food, and it will majorly disrupt your body and hormones. Bacteria are the first line defense against that. If you have antibiotics, drink lots of alcohol, you may be knocking off your bacteria. In fact, stress has been shown to kill those bacteria as well. How do you keep the bacteria at that gut wall up and optimized? You can add fermented foods into your diet, such as sauerkrauts or kimchi, misos, kefir, a very good yogurt. Not that I usually advocate having dairy, but when it's been denatured using an actual yogurt plant, they can be quite beneficial. So your fermented foods will carry with them different species and microbiome that can plant inside your gut wall. You could consider a pre and postbiotic. So you might have heard of probiotics. They are bacteria, so we know lots of different species that you can orally consume. So have them as a capsule and they can plant inside your gut. There's a very large company that have these little sweet drinks that have probiotics in them. Honestly, the probiotic in there is not worth the money nor the sugar that's in there either. So if you're going to try and reseed any bacteria back into your gut, I'd suggest taking a proper capsule. As I alluded to, there's lots of different species in the gut that normally should be there. Some of them you might have heard of, lactobacilli, there's bifidus, Saccharomyces, there's Plantarum, there's a whole stack of species, and we need a whole different dichotomy mix in order to be healthy. And years ago now, probably about 7 years ago, I went to a seminar and it was about how the microbiome impacts on weight loss. So it plays a very important role, not just with our hormones, but with our ability to regulate weight. You might have heard that we are what we eat, and that was it's been an adage that's been around for years, and it's 100% true. I'm really confused when people don't eat well and they wonder why their body's not performing and isn't as enhanced as it can be. To me, it's pretty obvious. If you're eating foods that are high in calories or nutrient low, then your body's going to be the same. If you eat foods that are highly packed with nutrient-rich chemicals such as your vitamins and minerals, your amino acids, then you too will experience a high performing body. Now, this is an invitation if you're going through menopause or any other transitional point in your life where your hormones might be changing, to really step up your eating, to consider having foods that are rainbow in color. So you've got your yellows and your reds, your oranges, your greens, your purples. So there's a whole spectrum of color offering your body a variety of different nutrients. It's how we used to eat and it's how we need to return to eating. Coupled in there, you'll want some high quality proteins. If you're a meat eater, healthy, lean meats, fantastic. If you're vegetarian, make sure you do your complementary proteins, nuts, seeds, and legumes will help constitute what's a complete protein mix for you. Fats are incredibly important, particularly when it comes to hormone balancing, and many people will have hormone imbalances simply because they're low on a couple of the fats such as GLA, ALA, which is alpha-linoleic acid, and these fats need to be obtained through eating them. You can take a supplement, but with a lot of these fats, they're highly rancid, so the actual impact that you absorb is quite low and food will be superior. Now, these are some super fats that I highly recommend to nurture your gut with and make sure your hormones are balancing, and they're deep sea fish. Try and get some deep sea fish that's wild caught, ideally in clean waters, tuna, salmon, herring, sardines. They have that oily coat around their bodies because they've been spawned in either the Arctic or the Antarctic, very cold waters. And because of that, they make this little layer of oil around their body, which is highly beneficial for us and for our hormones. Farmed fish don't have the same benefit. And normal river fish, similarly, they just don't have those oils, which is why those oils have been touted as. Now, you might have heard that those fish have been put on a ban list for pregnant women, and that's because they are a deep sea fish, your tuna, your salmon, and they have been noted to have high levels of mercury in them, which is not ideal if you're wanting to conceive or have children. So wild caught, yes. Hopefully in clean ocean waters, tick. Those fish still offer us so many beneficial oils. It'd be a shame to miss out on them. Other oils that you can look at having are liquid oils such as olive oil, coconut oil, hemp seed oil. I've got some macadamia oil at the moment, avocado oil, and they're all beautiful on salads or even just over steamed veggies. You could even put them in a smoothie. Seeds such as flaxseed, hemp seed, have omega-3s in them and oils, which put them into superfoods for me. So if you can get some hemp seeds, get some flax seeds, put them in smoothies. You can have them and crunch them, sprinkle them on veggies. They're quite nutty and they add a different dimension and give you some incredible fats to help with your hormones. There's a couple of foods I want to discuss which ideally you'd be avoiding when it comes to balancing hormones, and that's because they put an extra burden or an extra effort on your digestive system. And the two that I want to raise are gluten and dairy. Now, neither of those foods, or gluten, adds anything into your diet that you can't get elsewhere. And similarly with dairy. A lot of people have been brought up with the propaganda or the public message that you need fibre in your diet, which is 100% true. You do need fibre in your diet. That, remember, helps the large bowel gather in the water, so it works like a sponge in the large bowel, so you can pass everything out with a nice soft feces. Without fibre, it tends to be a lot harder to pass out. Now, wheat and things with gluten on it, such as rye, oats, barley, they're your four groups that will have gluten on it, are quite harmful to the gut. In fact, I always think of them like a toothbrush or a toilet brush going through your bowel, dragging and hurting that inside wall of your gut, which is meant to be permeable, but when you get gluten in there, it breaks those links. So instead of it being like a nice tight stocking, it ends up being a loose, very permeable gut wall. That's when we're more susceptible to bacteria, viruses coming into the gut because the netting is a lot looser. We want a nice tight net that allows the nutrients to pass through, but none of the nasty things such as the bacteria and viruses that are often in our food. Now, gluten, because it does that, will also swell up the local, you know, that gut wall. So it's, imagine if you had an ulcer in your mouth and it gets sore and a little bit swollen. That's happening all throughout your gut if you have a problem with gluten. If it activates your immune system, it's called celiac. But interesting, most people are somewhere on the spectrum of no problem at all, which is highly unlikely with gluten, to noticing that they get gassy, bloating, burping, to major issues like after having gluten, about an hour and a half, feeling really sleepy. I call it the gluten coma. Or having mouth ulcers or cracks in their lips, or headaches, feeling emotionally disconnected, or something that occurs on the skin, and that's called keratosis pilaris. And keratosis pilaris are these fine little pimples, and it can happen on the upper arms or on your thighs. If you have those little fine pimples, nearly 100% you'll have a gluten sensitivity. Can you check gluten sensitivity? You sure can. But interesting, a lot of people don't seroconvert and make antibodies. So I always recommend just get rid of it. You don't need it in your diet. You can get the fibre from other foods. You're probably doing more harm than is even registering to, you know, why wait to have symptoms when you know it's likely to be harming you? So just to recap, the four things that will have gluten on it are your wheats, rye, oats, and barley. Now, wheat as a grain comes in different formats. So durum wheat, which we make pasta from, can be a problem. I get asked about sourdough. Sourdough can be okay because it's fermented and the protein links in it have started to break down. So in theory, it should be easier on the gut wall. I did mention dairy there before. Dairy, once again, doesn't give the body anything that you can't get from other food sources. It's from a cow, generally, when we talk about dairy, although we can get goat milk, camel milk. No one would bother drinking cat or dog milk, yet we are happy to drink cow milk. And that doesn't make sense to me. We don't have the enzymes in our stomach to break down the proteins in dairy. 50% of people don't actually have the enzyme to break down the sugars in dairy, which is lactase, so they are lactose intolerant. Some people have a problem with the fat in dairy, but majority of people will have a problem with the protein. With dairy, there's three components to it. There's sugars, fats, and proteins. Now, interesting, in Australia, 50% of people of Caucasian colour cannot break down dairy. They lack the enzyme, which is called lactase. They're called lactose intolerant. 90% of Australian Indigenous have a problem with lactase. That's a huge number. So 9 in 10 of our Indigenous can't break down dairy. Fats can be a problem as well, but the really big problem is the proteins that are found in another animal's milk. And it might be the cow milk, it might be the camel milk, but or the dog milk, but we just can't break down those proteins. So those protein strands, and I was mentioning before, they need to be broken down into amino acids so they can be absorbed across that semi-permeable the stocking net. If they're not broken down, they pass through and the body thinks that it's a virus or a bacteria and it can augment the immune system. In fact, a lot of autoimmune conditions have dairy as an intolerant, and as soon as it's removed, it helps the body start to heal and takes that extra burden of digestion away for the body. If you're run down, as often happens during menopause or after you've had a baby, the last thing you want to be doing is putting extra workload on the gut. Removing those foods, the gluten-rich foods and the dairy from your body or diet can make a big difference in just taking that extra effort away from your gut so it can focus more on balancing your hormones. I wanted to touch on a little bit more of other gut symptoms apart from those gluten symptoms I was telling you before. So gluten symptoms affects the head, migraines, headaches, ADHD type agitation through to skin problems, psoriasis, eczema, keratosis pilaris, and your gut issues. Burping, bloating, constipation can all be symptoms of gluten intolerance. Dairy tends to give people runny diarrhea and unformed stools, but there are plenty of other ways that your body is signalling that the foods that you are eating are not suiting it, such as what just a general term called irritable bowel or IBS. Allergies. So allergies where you get rashes or get itchy or get headaches or a red flush when you eat certain foods. Then there are conditions that can be a result of the direct attack or the direct interaction of food on that whole system from your mouth down to your bottom. So you might end up with mouth ulcers or a coating of your tongue. You might end up with burning in your chest, which might indicate that you've got esophageal irritation or erosion. Stomach ulcers or stomach pains might be indicative of foods that are burning or corrosive to your gut and you shouldn't be eating, through to swollen sore liver, swollen small stomach that's bloated, and your large bowel. If you've got any bowel motion that's not you know, nice, soft, brown, light brown, passed 2 to 3 times a day, then consider what's happening with your foods and the probiotics and the microbiome mix within there. Serious gut conditions such as Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, diverticulitis, or celiac disease will all be improved by changing what you eat. I strongly recommend a hair test. It'll tell us if you've got parasites, bacterial overgrowth, and may indicate what nutrients you're missing in your diet. General information only, but there are plenty of things that you can start weaving into your foods that will help your gut health and ultimately balance your hormones. Herbs such as sage, thyme, cooking with rosemary, chamomile, even aloe. But be careful with aloe. If you've got the aloe vera bush at home, you want to know exactly what you're doing because part of it is very beneficial and part of it's poisonous. So you can get aloe juice already extracted for you. There are plenty of antimicrobials and antifungals and antiparasitics as well. One of my favourite is Chinese wormwood. It's also called Artemisia if you're looking for it, but this is general information only. I'd suggest a hair test before starting any of these things. As you can see, the gut's quite a complicated system and a very important one for the body, particularly when it comes to balancing your hormones. But when you break it down to making sure you're eating right, letting all the stomach acids be produced, allowing digestion to do its thing, and eating foods that are right for you with the right microbiome in your gut, it's actually a very rewarding system. If you've liked this podcast, please leave a 5-star review. Make sure to share it with your friends. Add any comments if you'd like to. And I look forward to helping you make hormones fun and sexy. See you on the next podcast.